Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 10. Text 1. Sri Narada Uvacha, Bhakti Yogasya Tat Sarvam, Antaraya Tayarbhaka, Manyamana Rishikesham, Svayamana Uvacha. The Saint Narada Muni continued, although Prahlad Maharaj was only a boy, when he heard the benedictions offered by Lord Nrsimhadev, he considered them impediments on the path of devotional service. Thus, he smiled very mildly and spoke as follows. Prahlad Maharaj said, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet. Purport. Materialistic life means attachment to the body and everything in relationship to the body. This attachment is based on lusty desires for sense gratification, specifically sexual enjoyment. When one is too attached to material enjoyment, he is bereft of all knowledge. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, those who are attached to material enjoyment are mostly inclined to worship the demigods to procure various material opulences. They are especially attached to worship of the goddess Durga and Lord Shiva, because this transcendental couple can offer their devotees all material opulence. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was detached from all material enjoyment. He therefore took shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nrsimhadev and not the feet of any demigod. It is to be understood that if one really wants release from this material world, from the threefold miseries, and from janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age, and disease, one must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For without the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot get released from materialistic life. Atheistic men are very much attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, if they get some opportunity to achieve more and more material enjoyment, they take it. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was very careful in this regard. Although born of a materialistic father, because he was a devotee, he had no material desires. Anya bilashita shunyam. Om agana tirmanandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshun militan yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You have the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead apparently tempting or alluring his own dear devotee? You may be thinking, well, isn't devotional service difficult enough to do without the Lord himself tempting us, alluring us? After all, we're in the material atmosphere, which is allurement itself. Material atmosphere is so saturated with allurement that you have to consider it as allurement itself. When you learn to look at the material world in that way, you have understood something. As we so often point out, the material world is not a place to fulfill your ambitions. It's not a place to make you feel good. It's not a place to fulfill your desires. It's a place to allure you and then to kick you. And there's no limit to the kicks. You may think, oh, okay, I've got my quota of kicks for this lifetime, so the rest of my life should be pretty good. No, there's no limit to the kicks. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mudha janmani janmani. Not only a fool in this lifetime, but birth after birth you'll be a fool. When we begin to see material existence as allurement, false promises that are never fulfilled, then we'll have a proper attitude toward it. But as long as we look to the material world as a place that is going to satisfy our desires, make us feel good, then we're going to have a lot of problems. That's why we need to hear Srimad Bhagavatam daily, because the Bhagavatam, the literary incarnation of Krishna for this dense darkness of the age of Kali, the Bhagavatam cleanses your consciousness of the desire for material enjoyment, which is causing so much trouble. This habitual desire for countless lifetimes. You can't get to the root of when it happened. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Anadi Karma Phale. You can't get to the beginning of your karmic entanglement. Sometimes devotees really become absorbed in trying to find out or figure out, how do we contact the material atmosphere? How do we get into this labyrinth of karma? When was the initial point that we jumped into the pool? What happened at that time? We have to know these things. Now, let's be practical. When you've been very sick and you go to the doctor, how many of you have demanded of the doctor, how did I get this disease? We've got to get to that point in which the germs entered my system. We've got to figure it all out. How many of you have done that? Now, what happens when you go to a doctor? You're very sick. You want to be cured. So similarly, it is very practical. It is not a dodge of something very critical for you to understand. It is very practical for you to focus almost all your efforts on how to get out of material existence. And not so much how you jumped in. Because as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's so complicated. It's such a entangled mess. You don't have the intelligence to unravel the whole ball of yarn. Simply, you should understand that you turned away from Krishna's service. Therefore, you couldn't be a normal resident of the spiritual world. And into the dream world you came to fulfill imaginary desires. The false ego is the imaginary connection between matter and spirit. Because of the false ego, I am Krishna's competitor. There's material existence unfolding. And as soon as that false ego is replaced by real ego, I am Krishna's service. Servant. Once again, you have that real ego, then material existence disappears. So the whole entangled snarl of material existence is brought about by this false ego. From there, all the complications come. You're dealing with a situation beyond time. Therefore, how can you say, when did I contact the material energy for the first time? Time is a material phenomenon. So how do you ask a when question about a situation in which there is no time? But still we want to know. I want to know when, how, where, why. Meanwhile, we are deeply entangled in material existence and we should be asking, how do I get out? How do I get out? How do I get out? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada instructed, don't waste so much time trying to figure out how you got in. Spend most of your effort on how to get out. Understand your original homeland, the spiritual world. Feel regret for having left there. and then absorb yourself in devotional service. When you return back home, back to Godhead, your material existence of countless millions or billions of years will just seem like a short dream. How many of you remember a little or something of what you dreamed last night? Raise your hands. Okay. But now it's just like, right? Similarly, your material existence. It'll be just a quick dream once you are reestablished in your original constitutional position of loving Krishna. Yes, you can remember your past material existence, but you won't want to. Just like if you really strain your memory now, you could try to remember everything of your dream. But you'll notice as the days go by, it'll fade so quickly. And you've got better things to do than try to, you know, hold on to a dream and analyze it minutely. Of course, devotees like to dream of Krishna. They like to dream of their spiritual master. I was telling devotees in Auckland last week a dream I had of Srila Prabhupada. I was reading in Bhagavatam some purport with its usual amazing, ecstatic concepts. So I read something. Then I ran to Srila Prabhupada. Look at this. This is amazing. It's unbelievable. He would just... Then I would go back and I would read some more. Wow, look at that. This is amazing. Who could think like this? I would run to Srila Prabhupada. Look at this. So then again, I would just go start reading. Amazing. Oh, look at this. I've got to show Prabhupada this section. I'd run to him. Wow, this is amazing, isn't it? Again, he would just... So then after three times like that, I got the point. I didn't have to run to him physically in the ordinary sense that I was associating with him by reading his books. So we wish that realization upon you all. So, we have a lot of work to do. We want that this devotional community is a place where the practitioners will work on themselves and help others to work on themselves. I admit this is not a very good community if you want to hide from yourself. I've realized that a few persons, you know, come along and they feel very uncomfortable that, you know, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. I didn't mean to do it like that. But somehow things have evolved in that way. Everyone, so to speak, has to work on their stuff. Why? Not because, you know, some kind of trendy new age thing to work on your stuff, work on your issues. No, we're not so selfish. We want to work on our stuff because we want to improve our service to Krishna and help others to be Krishna conscious. And how can we do that unless we are Krishna conscious? Now, we're speaking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, apparently alluring his own devotee. And you might be thinking that devotional life is tough enough. You know, the mind is just ravaging you, taking you here and there. Your heart is full of wounds from the past. So there's anger, resentment there, cynicism, because you were exploited in the past, used, and tossed away. So you might think, isn't this enough to deal with? Why is Krishna alluring his own devotee? But actually, it's not like that. We'll find out. Now, just look at Prahlad's ecstatic Krishna conscious practice. When he heard the benedictions offered by Lord Nrsimhadev, he considered them impediments on the path of devotional service. Although he's just a boy, therefore he smiles mildly. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the bhakti yoga point. When one is allured by material possessions, they are considered to be given by Maya. But when one uses material possessions fully for service, they are considered God's gifts or facilities offered by Krishna for enhancing one's devotional service. This is what we want to do. We want to enhance our devotional service. When you care for someone, you want to enhance the relationship, add value to the relationship. And our relationship with Krishna is devotional service. We want to always enhance that service, improve the quality of it. That is what it means to make spiritual advancement. Prahlad smiled mildly. He was wise to what is good for Krishna's pleasure and what is not good. Therefore, he considered even Lord Nrsimhadev's offering material benedictions as impediments on the path to devotional service. This is how sharp Prahlad is. We should always analyze our life to see where are the impediments to our devotional service. Because that's the nature of material existence, to throw impediments in the path of your desire to serve Krishna. In that way, you become stronger. And also, in that way, the material energy weeds out those who aren't very sincere and keeps them from bugging Krishna. It's a filtration process. Screening process. And those who are apparently filtrated out or screened out, they can understand, I've got to be more serious next time. Krishna is the most serious about relationships. Some of you I know are, you know, you're really into the relationship thing, you know, as ordinarily known in this world. Of course, you want your relationships to be Krishna conscious, but you really take the relationship seriously. You've got to do like this, and I will do like that. Now, what do you plan to do 30 years from now? Let me tell you what I plan to do 30 years from now. Now, if I did such and such, how would you respond? Now, if you did such and such, I can tell you how I would respond. Now, what do you think? If I did such and such 20 years from now, what would you say 20 years from now? In this way, you're like, you know, trying to sort it all out, make it right. For now, until eternity. Krishna is the most serious about relationships. That's why there's Maya. The Maya is there to deal with persons who aren't serious about dealing with Krishna. So those of you who are, you know, deep into the relationship thing, as ordinarily known, you should know that. You should understand. You can never match Krishna's seriousness and dedication to relationships. That's what you should understand from this Leela with Prahlad Maharaj. Who can match Krishna's dedication for relationships? Just think. Hiranyakashipu had received a benediction that he could not be killed on land. He could not be killed in the sky, on water. He couldn't be killed by a man, by an animal, or a demigod. He couldn't be killed during the day. He couldn't be killed during the night. He couldn't be killed inside the house, outside the house. He thought, I've got it all covered. I'm immortal. I've tricked Lord Brahma into giving me your immortality. What a great scientist I am. Because Brahma explained. Yeah, I can't give you immortality. Only Vishnu can do that. And certainly Hiranyakashipu was not going to have anything to do with Vishnu, his enemy, who killed his brother here in Yaksha. So Brahma explained the truth. I can't give you immortality. But Hiranyakashipu had a brilliant scientific mind. With my intelligence, I'll come up with a package. I'll craft a package that's as good as being immortal. So, grant that I will not be killed in a day or night.
Granted.
Grant that I will not be killed inside or outside. Granted. On and on, he went. And then, when the whole package was complete, I'm immortal. Now I can terrorize the whole world eternally. We discussed that feeling of the conditioned soul. If I ruled the world, queen for a day, king for a day. So Hiranyakashipu actually did that. Yet, out of love for the devotee. You see, Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared more out of love for Prahlad than out of desire to kill Hiranyakashipu. Killing Hiranyakashipu was a great sport for Lord Nrisimhadeva. But the main reason he appeared was because of Prahlad. And you know how it is that he jumped over all of Hiranyakashipu's stipulations and promises that Hiranyakashipu had received from Brahma. Lord Nrisimhadeva killed Hiranyakashipu, not in the day and not at night, but at dusk, twilight, in between. He didn't kill him inside the house or outside the house, but on the threshold, the doorway. He didn't kill Hiranyakashipu. On the land or on the sky? He killed him on his lap, which is neither the land nor the sky. And Hiranyakashipu had received the benediction that no creature could, no man could kill him, and no animal, no creature, no demigod could kill him. So the Supreme Personality of God had appeared as Narahari, half man, half lion, neither animal nor man. And then Hiranyakashipu had received a benediction. He can't be killed by any weapons. He thought he had it all figured out. Brilliant scientific genius. And how did Lord Nrisimhadeva kill him? With his nails. Lord Nrisimhadeva took his nails and ripped open the belly of Hiranyakashipu. Nails aren't a weapon. So in this way, just see how serious the Supreme Personality of Godhead is for relationships. Nothing will stop my relationship with Prahlad. No one will get in the way. Even the benedictions offered by Lord Brahma are no impediment for me. I'll honor those benedictions and still kill him anyway. I'll still kill Hiranyakashipu anyway. Keep all the benedictions intact because of my relationship with Prahlad. Now that's the kind of relationship you want. That's the kind of relationship you should be hungry for. Yet, what do we find? Especially in Kali Yuga. Men and women are so weak, incapable, yet their lusts are so strong. And they mistake that powerful lust for competency. They mistake that powerful lust for you know, expertise in making one's way through the material world. This is Western so-called civilization. Just be lusty and everything will be all right. It'll all work out. You can feel lust, so you must be smart. You must have a brain. You're feeling lust. That is Western so-called civilization. And they become even proud that, yeah, we know the animals are also doing like this. But anyway, as we all know, we have evolved from the animals. So what's the problem? It's just the unity of nature. Human beings are more and more like animals. It means they're closer to their roots. What's the problem? Let's be real. In Kali Yuga, as predicted by Shukadeva Goswami, there's no question of honesty, integrity, physical strength, intellectual strength. These scientists who people are so indebted to for bringing such technology, their brains are very small compared to the persons you read about in Bhagavatam. What does Shukadeva Goswami say? Dakshyam Katumba Paranam. In the age of Kali, if a man can maintain a wife and one or two kids, he's known as expert. Oh, just how you've got a wife and one or two kids and you're maintaining them. Well, you're amazing. Whereas in other yugas, even the poorest person can do such with ease. And Dampati Biduchir Hetu. Man and woman will attempt to cohabit with each other just on the basis of sexual attraction. That's the main reason. How to solve that itching problem. And if they don't like the itch in one situation, they disband it off to another situation. We'll deal with the itch here, we'll deal with the itch there, we'll deal with the itch everywhere. The only thing that's lasting and permanent is the itch. The relationships are just accessories. They're just supplementary. The main thing is the itch. And this is called human civilization. And we spoke about how people are in such anxiety because of lack of proper relationships. In a real human civilization, people know how to have, they know how to have a family, they know how to have friends, they know how to have lifelong relationships. Maybe, I don't think any of you are old enough to remember, maybe New Zealand 40 years ago, when people had lifelong relationships. Maybe your parents might be able to tell you something about that. At least your grandparents. It wasn't that people were moving all the time, here, there, everywhere. No, they stayed in their town. They had lifelong relationships, obligations, reciprocations. All that is finished now. Someone was telling me how even 25 years ago, if you wanted to buy, let's say, a shirt, it would be more expensive than it is now, but it would last three times as long as what you get now. And you knew the person who made the shirt, and that person therefore felt some, you know, obligation. He couldn't just, you know, cheat you and then disappear. You know, everyone knew who all the merchants were, or who all the manufacturers were, so they were personal. There's personal accountability. Now there's no personal accountability. You go to the store, you buy something. Oh, it's so cheap. Just a little money for this article of clothing. And then it falls apart so quickly. You know, it's been imported from China or some Indonesia, someplace like that. And the persons who make it have no connection with their customers. Everyone wants to make a fast buck. No personal accountability. That's no way to have a human society. Here in this urban community, we strive for personal accountability. We want principled behavior. We have protocols for dealing with everything. And generally, most of the members of the community, they can resonate with that. Every once in a while, you get someone who wants to, you know, overturn the apple cart. What's the point of all these protocols? And what's the point of all these ways of doing things? You know, just get it on whatever way you want. A real human civilization means personal accountability and lasting relationships. And because people don't have that, they're so disturbed in their mind and so parched and dry in the heart and such anxiety, they're so jittery all the time because there's no proper environment of relationships that are lasting. So there's people are jittery, on edge, mental problems, physical problems. And whenever you begin to speak about relationships, everyone's interested because they've lost the art of how to have basic relationships. What used to be common sense, commonplace, is now esoteric. How to have relationships. We've explained. They go to the bookshop, there's so many books. How to have a relationship. How to say no to the one you love. How to say yes to the one you love. How to interpret the smile of your beloved. On it goes. How to not love too much. How to not love too little. Every possible angle. When you go to India, even though India is rapidly changing, still there is a core of human culture there. And you see all the ways of dealings between the various family members, friends. It's all worked out for hundreds of years. There's no mystery to it all, and therefore the people can grow up without having to reinvent the wheel every year, you know? There's a whole pattern developed for since time immemorial. This is how children treat their parents. This is how parents treat the children. This is how husband treats the wife. This is how wife treats the husband. These are the obligations. These are the expectations. Now you are trying to have a human society. Speaking about the material situation, you're trying to have a human society with no understanding of relationships, no traditions, no culture of expectations, obligations. And what is simply the main unifying principle? The itch. That's it. That'll bring us all together. Never mind what kind of relationship it is. You have to deal with the itch. And everyone will nod their head in approval. Yeah, yeah, that's what it's all about. I think I told you once, example, my father and his sister and brother-in-law, my aunt, she was, I guess, in her 50s, late 50s, probably late 50s, I think, maybe even early 60s. And she had multiple cirrhosis, so her muscles were just useless. And her husband was a doctor, very successful doctor. So they lived very comfortably, you know, very prosperous. But she was bedridden as she got up in her years, multiple cirrhosis. And then she found out that her husband had a paramour. And she went into a rage. She immediately wanted to divorce him. And I remember my father, because that was her brother. My father, you know, went and talked to her like, look, you know, He's taking care of you so nicely. He's a doctor, first of all. And secondly, you have a big house, this, that, the other. You know, you got to understand, you know. A man has to be a man, you know. You had to just make an arrangement about the itch, you know. He may be 60, but, you know, that doesn't stop anyone. My father was a firm devotee of the Hugh Hefner Playboy philosophy. So, but that's old stuff for you guys. You know, I mean, back in the 50s, that was like, you know, the cutting edge, you know. Now everyone is like that. The Hugh Hefner philosophy was, you know, just scratch the itch no matter what. That's your obligation in life. So, you know, my father pleaded with her, look, you know, what's the problem, you know? He's taking care of you, you know. Everything is fine. It's just, you know, he just had to make an arrangement to deal with life's prime necessity, the ultimate goal of life, that's all. Some bunda abideya priyojana. No, she wouldn't listen, you know, I'm through with him, you know, even though there she is, you know, bedridden and like that. So, regardless of the practicality of the situation, the point is, you know, I was quite impressed by my father's bhakti to this particular vision. Yeah, what's wrong? What do you expect? You know, I mean, you know, yeah. he's just trying to be wholesome and balanced. you don't want him to become out of balance, do you? He's just aligning all his energies. Now, this is what you call human society. The itch is what justifies everything. It is the central unifying factor, the sinosaur. No, this is animal life. And therefore people feel such disruption in their relationships. And they pass that disruption and anxiety on to their children. The children have no idea how to have lasting relationships. And therefore the children are so mentally and physically unstable. And then they come to Gaur Yoga and we have to try to straighten them out. It takes quite some effort and labor because most have never had stable relationships, stable family, stable obligations, stable responsibilities in relationships. It's all been a whirl based on the itch. And because the itch barrage from the media, television, music, is so powerful that you can't even rely on, if you had a material family that stuck together for 5 years, even within that family unit, no matter how temporary, that also becomes a place of abuse. Because people are so wired up to the max, you know, about the itch. Everything is fair game. Even your own family members. Why not? Therefore, these social statistics, for example, from the USA, not that that's the only country where it goes on, but they just take careful statistics there. 1 out of 4 children has been abused by someone the child knows. Family, friend, or relative, someone within the family. This is the way it is. 1 out of 4. Recently, the Indian government just was totally went into shock when they did just a small survey to find out how much child abuse was going on. And they were just astonished. Because in India, you don't talk about those things. At all. Well, they did a survey, just one section of society, and they were shocked at the level of child abuse done within the family. But because there's such a taboo about discussing anything about the itch, For the children, of course, they would never say anything. No one would say anything. And it's happening more and more that from our Indian congregation, we hear incidents of the children being abused. They tell the mother. The mother doesn't know what to do about it, you know, how to cope with it all, what to say to the father. And because they don't know what to do, you know, they just have the tradition, well, when you don't know what to do, and it's not going to cost you so much, go to the local Swami and ask him. Free advice. It won't put a dent in the bank account. So then they go, Swamiji, please tell us what to do with this situation. But those kind of situations actually require professional intervention because you're dealing with a lot of deep psychological complexities. So my point is, people are so shaky today about relationships, and that causes such disturbed minds and bodies. But Krishna is perfection in relationship, and he's showing that in his interaction with Prahlad Maharaj. He's showing, you can depend on me. I'll appear even as a half man, half lion to rescue my devotee and show my affection for my devotee. Nothing gets in the way of my affection for my devotees. Now he's allured, Prahlad, with benedictions, material benedictions. But Prahlad analyzes the situation. These are impediments on the path of bhakti. What is the path of bhakti? Krishna's pleasure. This gets in the way of Krishna's pleasure. What Lord Nrisingadeva is offering me. I can't accept that. Krishna's pleasure, his service is my life and soul. This is a devotee. You analyze everything. How is this favorable for my devotional service? How is this not favorable? Prahlad is speaking as he smiles. And he says, Mamam pralobhayot patya saktam kameshu tire varai tatsanga bito nirvinno mamukshushtam upashrita. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. Now just see, this is a devotee. Normally, if someone's offered material benedictions, grab it without hesitation. Yes, this is what life's all about. And here we have material benedictions being offered by God. Oh, the perfection of religion, the perfection of yoga. But no, Prahlad Maharaj is showing you real dharma, real religion. What you are offering will get in the way of our pure relationship. Think about that. What you are offering will disturb the sacredness, the sanctity of our relationship, which is simply pure devotional service. Therefore, Prahlad was very careful. Now, notice how Prahlad does a self-assessment. It's very important to do a self-assessment. Look at my birth. Utpatya, because of my birth in a demoniac family. Obviously, I have certain tendencies. I have a certain background, which produces certain propensities. Devotee is always humble to think, my circumstances were not at all conducive for devotional service. Because of the circumstances I took birth in, I'm naturally attached to material enjoyment. Kameshu, saktam kameshu. I'm already attached. It's natural. Actually, Prahlad has no material desires, but he's showing you how to take stock of your situation, how to do an assessment to make you realistic so that you'll appreciate the dangers of the illusory energy and the dangers of having a demoniac background. And this way you won't have a cavalier attitude. You know, it's such a freestyle attitude as you interact with the material world. You'll be mindful of your past and the tendencies that past has embedded in you. Because I was born in an atheistic family, I'm naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. Prahlad is spelling it out clearly. These are illusions you're offering me, my dear Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he, after his self-assessment and his pointing out what's going on, he presents his emotional state in that he says, I'm very much afraid of material conditions. I don't want my devotional service to be riddled with material conditions. I want to be an unconditional devotee. Often you hear people, yes, talk about unconditional love. They have no idea what it is. But it's a cool thing to say. We've pointed out several times. Yes? Anyone ever bandied those slogans about? Anyone? Yes. Come on, admit it. Who did it? Michelle, you? Yes?
I've been offered it.
What did you say?
We'll see about that.
What does that mean? We'll see about it.
I guess they have to prove it.
Meanwhile, things will go on, right? Better something faulty than nothing, right? Anyone else? As we point out, how can you be a conditioned soul and offer unconditional love? To be a conditioned soul means your whole life is saturated with conditions. Your happiness is dependent on conditions. Your enthusiasm is dependent on conditions. Your very life itself is a condition. This body is a condition. This mind is a condition. And you're going to offer unconditional love. Impossible. So, if you're ever in a situation, which I hope you'll never be in, an ordinary material situation in which someone proposes that to you, just laugh. You ought to. Of course, if you're in a material situation, you won't be able to laugh. You'll have to believe. Why? Because your material desires will be pushing you. Believe it. Anyway, just for a day. Believe it. Just for a night. Just for a weekend. Believe it. Who knows? It could work out. Some or other, although it's starting in such a transitory, fly-by-night way. It could become something real and permanent. I asked Guru Vani, why? What are the ladies thinking when they flit from man to man, and act in such a way devoid of self-respect, devoid of character and integrity? How do they do this? Just flit from man to man. He said, what they think is that, even though it may be just a one-night affair tonight, he could turn out to be Mr. Right. So you jump from one to the other. He could be the one. He could be the one. He could be the one. Meanwhile, at least you're doing something. Something's happening, You're not alone and you're dealing with the itch, But he could be the one. So underneath it all, she was explaining that is this traditional desire for one partner. That's at the core of it all. And so even when flitting through so many partners, they're thinking, you know, I'm sorting through them all. You know, filtration process, you know. Who knows? This one could be it. And if not, well, anyway, had something to do for the weekend and maybe had some money or, you know. We went to Fiji together. Or, yeah. Oh. There's no question of unconditional love as long as you are a conditioned soul subject to conditions. Prahlad Maharaj is standing up for unconditional love. Do not tempt me, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, with these illusions. I'm very much afraid of material conditions. In other words, I'm afraid of anything that will make my love conditional. I desire to be liberated from material life. Now, is that a selfish desire? What does Prahlad Maharaj mean when he says he desires to be liberated from materialistic life? Does he mean he just wants relief from material existence for his own self-satisfaction? No. When he says he desires to be liberated from materialistic life, that means he desires to be liberated from any possible conditions that would impede his pure love for Krishna. Otherwise, Prahlad has already said, I don't want to go back to Godhead unless all the illusion, conditioned souls, unless they're going, I don't want to go back. He's already made his pure devotional stance. So when he says, I desire to be liberated from materialistic life, he's meaning the conditions, the impediments to pure love. If you have pure love for Krishna, it doesn't matter where you are, material world or spiritual world, you're actually in the spiritual world. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya prays, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaram, Kavitam, Jagadisha Kame, Mama Janmini, Janmini Ishvare, Bhavatad Bhakti, Ahoitikitwe. I don't mind taking birth after birth in the material world, just as long as I have pure devotion to Krishna's lotus feet. Text 3. Britya lakshana jigyasur bhaktam kamesh pachodayat bhavan samsara bijeshu hridaya granthishu prabho. O worshipable Lord, because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. We'll discuss this verse more tomorrow. It has various aspects, certainly, that would help us. We'll discuss the samsara bij, that seed of material existence, repeated birth and death. That seed which is the root of our problems. That seed consists of lusty material desires. Hridaya granta, the hard knot in the heart. This is causing the problem. But who is identifying the real culprit? This samsara bij. Just like the bhakti lata bij, the seed of the creeper of devotion. Similarly, there's the samsara bij, the seed of repeated birth and death. Prahlad Maharaj is now saying that because everyone is troubled by this seed of lusty desire within the core of their hearts, you have sent me to this world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. And therefore, Lord Nrisingadeva is apparently tempting him. Take these material benedictions. But Prahlad knows, this is your arrangement so that someone, even though I'm unqualified, so that I can demonstrate what is pure and conditional love. Otherwise, how will anyone know? How will the conditioned souls know, that is? So we'll discuss this verse and others. Next class. Got any questions? Yes?
You're saying that the time is spent in the material will just be like a dream.
That's what Prabhupada said. He told us his books are better than him. Meaning, they're better at sustaining relationships than the physical association, which may be there and may not be there. So first understand that, and then you can work on understanding what's going to go on in the spiritual world. When I was a young devotee, my whole mission was how to get Prabhupada's physical association. That was the motivating factor behind all my service. Yeah. And I finally maneuvered into a situation where I was in charge of the his book production. And that person always got to associate with Prabhupada. So I learned everything about that service. Yeah. And then when the person who was doing that service, was having some difficulty and kind of faded, and the BBT was in a panic. Oh no, we have no book production manager. Prabhupada's gonna really nuke us. Oh, what are we gonna do? I mean, if he sees that there's a delay in his book production and there's no book production manager, oh, we're finished. Then I just raised my hand. Guess what? I know everything about this service. How did you learn all this? I said, don't worry about it. It's just like, the jiva falling from the spiritual world, Never mind how it happened, Let's deal with the situation now. But he knows everything. There's such a relief. Well, they just only momentarily ask, how did you learn all this? But I mean, I'm going to show, you take the service and you figure out everything. Yes, I will. Now I have the direct line to Srila Prabhupada. No leaders in the way. No older devotees in the way. Just me and Prabhupada. But by that time, Prabhupada was already winding up his pastimes in this world. So, regardless of my, sincere but young aspirations, Srila Prabhupada showed me that the intense association comes another way, through the Vani. Now, it is true, you take advantage of whatever vapu, whatever physical association you get. Yeah, you take advantage of that. Don't say, oh, we're beyond that. Srila Prabhupada said that physical association of the guru is for neophytes. Well, certainly, we would all sign up to be neophytes. Yeah, that's me, neophyte, eternally. But you take what you get. But at the same time, you should know the most intense association is through the instruction. I know some of you, it's hard to understand that through the Vani, through the instruction, that has all the emotional necessities. It's hard to understand. You can't figure it out with conditioned intelligence. Physical association, vapu, it sometimes it's there, sometimes not. Vani is always there. But you have to be committed to the process of bhakti, to spend the time, to manifest the dedication to find all that out. Other questions? Yes?
Coming from Kali Yuga, for example, families, obviously in the West, they're quite neglected, or there's not proper relationships with parents. Here we come to Krishna consciousness and we find to actually experience relationship with Krishna, we have to actually give of ourselves. And it can seem like a long distance to go when we haven't ever, well, conditioned life, received care. So it can feel like, well, now I have to work hard to actually even earn Krishna's love.
Why do you have to work hard to earn Krishna's love?
Well, because we have to show our love for him, like we have to come forward and offer devotional service, like it's not an automatic thing. There's a relationship.
It is the natural thing to do, but you're artificially unattracted to Krishna. But it is the natural thing. And the more you perform devotional service, the more you realize this is the natural thing. This is the real thing. And definitely be sure, know it as a fact, know it for a fact, that if you don't give to Krishna, you will give to Maya. You have to give. It's not that, well, I'm not giving to Krishna and I'm not giving to anyone. That is not so. You can look at anyone's life and see they are giving. And Maya forces you to give. Give at the workplace. Give in this relationship. Give to the army. Give to the government. You know, you have to give. It's like my brother's son. His nephew. My nephew. Never spent so much time around him, but I remember maybe 2 years ago when I went to made a brief appearance at a family reunion. I think it was my mother's 75th birthday celebration. So he was a young guy, 18 years old, you know. He had a few of his 18-year-old mates there and other 18-year-old relatives, and they were just engaged in talking about professional basketball, you know, with such intensity. You'd think they were devotees talking about Sankirtan or something. No, this player is better. No, you know, he may be able to dribble the ball with one hand, you know, but this other guy can dribble the ball with both hands with the same expertise. And on and on they went. I can see these guys are possessed. They're driven. What's making them talk like this? What is the power that gives them that enthusiasm to talk about these things? On and on and on they go. And so spontaneously, so quickly, this sports team, that sport team, this athlete, that athlete, they're taking it so seriously. Their hearts are invested in it. Anyway, this particular young man, he violated the family tradition by not excelling in school. Although his father, my brother, would, you know, lecture him very severely. He was kind of one of those, you know, good time guys, you know. So, finally he decided he would join the armed forces, you know, to make a man out of himself. He realized by the time he was 19 he wasn't going anywhere. And in terms of the family he's from, you know, we're the family of high achievers. So, yeah, he was, I guess you would say he was kind of acting like the average Kiwi youth of today. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know. Like, was it Rory was telling me? Oh, maybe I thought I would just go to school, learn how to play the bass, you know. And then I get into a band and, you know, yeah. Yeah, go to school, learn how to play the bass, get into debt, you know, learning how to play the bass at the Polytech or something like that, you know, and let your hair grow long. Yeah, I was going to let my hair grow long, and I'd look to join a band. And considered normal in New Zealand, but for this particular family, that's considered, you better get yourself together. So, my brother was on his case, you know. You're 18, you're out of high school. What are you going to do? You know you're not going to the top schools, which is a blow to the family. So, got to come up with something. He said, all right, I'll join the armed forces, the military, you know, because, you know, they pay well in the USA. And he had it all figured out. I won't join the army or the Marines, because what does that mean? Huh? Huh? Go to war on land. Yes. Yeah. You know, if you join the Navy, you know, or the Air Force, you know, you're far away from the war, from the actual combat, you know. You just stay on a ship somewhere and, you know, out of action, out of frontline action. Yeah. So he had it all figured out. I'll join the Navy. I'll never see land. I'll never see combat on land. You know, who wants to join the Army? That's for the, you know, either the super gung-ho soldier types or just the dummies, you know, who want to be get on land with a rifle and get into combat. You know, no way I'm getting into any firefights. I'll join the Navy. I'll be out in the ocean with all technology. You launch a few cruise missiles from the ship onto the shore, but I'll be far away, safe in the ocean. Everyone knows no one tangles with the American navies. You know, just stay on a ship, you know, 50 miles offshore and just, you know. That'll be the worst it'll be. Signed up for the Navy. And once you sign up, you've signed up. You've joined. It's not that you can go to them in the Navy and say, "Well, I just don't like this service that you gave me. It doesn't really fulfill me. And the person who's in charge, you know, it's just, you know, we just don't resonate." You can do that as a devotee, you know. Because this is a volunteer organization, yeah. We're supposed to be trying to develop pure love, but, you know, meanwhile. So once he joined the Navy, he's in the Navy. Mm-hmm. You can indicate your preference, of course. That's one of their marketing techniques to recruit you. What would you like to do when you join the Navy? So, you know, he indicated, whatever, just keep me on the ship, that's all. So, you know, they give you aptitude tests. He took the aptitude tests. They found out, ooh, this guy's pretty sharp. He's not the ordinary Joe off the street. He may just want to do something safe and easy, but we, you know, we got plans for him. You know, this is the Navy. We got to utilize this. You know, that's their whole thing. You know, got to utilize all the resources. That's smart. That's what we should be trying to do as devotees. Utilize all the resources for Krishna's pleasure, but they're interested in utilizing all the resources for war. You know, the American war machine. So, whoa, look at this test result. This guy's no slow. Yeah, we've got to get a challenge for him. All right, we know just what you can do. You know, they have the Navy commandos, which are called SEALs. Now, we didn't sign up to be a commando, of course, and we'll never, therefore, you know, there's no question. He didn't have the physical strength or the cutthroat nature to be a commando. I said, but you're smart enough, therefore we're going to make you the supply officer of a team of commandos. And what does that mean? You won't be on the boat. You're going to be on the land in Iraq. And you're going to manage all the supplies for the commandos that are going out and doing covert operations. He said, what? Wait a minute, I didn't join the Navy to go on land, be around with this warfare and shooting. I joined the Navy to be on a safe boat, far from the land. My dear boy, you have joined the Navy. You will do what we say. That's what he had to do. But because of the advanced communication systems these days, you know, it's so easy to make a phone call, even from the battlefield. So, yeah, he's calling up my mother, you know. Oh, I've been so scared. Boom! Did you hear that? My mother's going, oh, my Lord! Oh, Jesus! Oh, my baby! Oh, please, please! How am I going to get out of here? Boom! It's not that he's in the battle, but it's just, you know, outside the perimeter, you know. He's actually safe behind, you know, a huge fortress, you know. You know, they don't just have the commandos have a base in any haphazard circumstances. You know, these are the cream of the military, you know, the commandos. So they, you know, they do go out into danger, but when they come back, they're behind a real, inside a real fortress. But, you know, my nephew, he just didn't appreciate all that. All he heard was boom and bam, bombs exploding out somewhere out there in the distance and, you know, all sorts of, you know, rifle fire. And so, so much for all his scheming. Just see, this is the material energy. It will take from you. And you have to give. He had to give. He didn't want to, but he had to give. I don't know if many of you can remember your material circumstances where you had to give. It's like Johnny Das can tell you about his university experience. He had to give. Perform. Act like you're a genuine PhD candidate. Get on the stage. Perform. Theatrics. Show us you're serious. Let us see the pure bhakti. You may not plan to give the material energy, but it has plans to force you to give. Everyone has to give. So why just blame Krishna? Why do we have to give so much in devotional service? I remember I was visiting home for a couple of days, and every maybe year and a half or 2 years, I drop by for a couple of days. That's sannyasi. So I remember my nephew calling on the phone, calling his grandma, grandma. Boom. She's, you know, calling out the holy name. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my baby. Oh, Lord, protect my baby. Oh. Yeah, it's not her son. It's her son's son. But anyway, still, you know, it's, you know, the bodily conception. It's all the same. You know, first the children, then the grandchildren. Anyway, I remember him. Yeah, my mother asked, "Well, what do you want? What do you want, my dear child? What do you want? What can we send you?" And what did he ask for? Some warm blankets and some beef jerky. That was going to satisfy him. It was dried beef. They eat that in New Zealand? That was a special request. Some dried beef to gnaw on while the bombs are exploding. So, what are you saving yourself for? That's what you have to ask yourself. What are you preserving yourself for? I don't want to give too much to Krishna. You got to be careful about Krishna. But when it comes to Lucy energy, take me away. I'll give you whatever I want. Whatever you want. Take me away. This is cheating. So, just like Prahlad Maharaj, we want to be honest in our relationship with Krishna. We don't want to undergo any more being cheated by the illusory energy and having a cheating mentality in our heart. That I'll offer everything to the material energy. I'll fulfill the material energy's demands. But Krishna, got to be careful. You could be doing too much devotional service. Any other questions? Yes.
You said that if you use material benedictions for Krishna consciousness, then they're fine. But what about how should we act when we're using something material in both for Krishna consciousness and for material things? For example, like using a computer can use it for so much service, but at the same time, you can waste so much time on the internet.
Give me an example of wasting time on the internet.
Randomly browsing to various websites, reading latest news on whatever.
There's no harm in knowing a bit about the daily news. But how much news do you need to know? What's the attraction? Increasing information, that's a good one. Yeah, that's another kind of lust, you know? Increasing the information you get. What's the use of that information? Sometimes things can be used in Krishna's service and sometimes not. I spent some time yesterday researching about spirulina and chlorella and barley grass because they do have some special effects on the health. And doctors prescribe that I have to take more of phytonutrients, is that what they're called? Yeah, the green stuff. So, other than that, I can't imagine the mentality of someone just surfing on the internet, but I guess it's, you know, if you've got nothing to do with your time.
And it's an easy distraction from thinking about more difficult things.
Yes, it's a fact. An easy distraction. Persons can just study in school endlessly, so they don't have to think about themselves and think about things. Yes. In this way, we waste our precious human form of life. Anything else? Marie?
Maharaj, as conditioned souls, is it possible to have the unconditional determination to follow spiritual instructions? And how do we get that?
Krishna says in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasyatmaka Buddhya Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Bahushaka yanantascha buddhayo vivasayinam. Krishna says, those who are on this bhakti path, they are resolute and their aim is one. Whereas the intelligence of non-devotees, bahushaka yanantascha, is unlimitedly many-branched, splayed out in all directions. So yes, by taking the instructions of your spiritual masters, your life and soul, and in ISKCON, that means Srila Prabhupada's instructions, as presented to you by his servants. Take that as your life and soul, and you will become one-pointed. Just like some of our devotees, some of the very dedicated Sankirtan devotees, they've said to me, how can we go on distributing books year after year, decade after decade, and life after life? Well, that takes determination. You think the material energy is just going to sit back and say, okay, Sukanti Radha, just go right ahead. No way. You make propaganda against Maya, Maya will make propaganda against you. That's the way it is. It's not that the material energy is just going to sit back and say, all right, Sukanti Radha, Sandrananda, just go on distributing all your life. I promise you the material energy will never lift a finger. No. There'll be things thrown in your path, roadblocks. But if you're really determined, you go through them by Krishna's grace. That's the way the world is. And Krishna appreciates that sacrifice, that effort. When our devotees enter into relationships, if, for example, they want to become grihasthas, they signal, I'm ready to go through all the impediments, you know, I'm ready to, you know, through all circumstances, to be committed to this relationship. Oh yeah, we know it's not going to always be easy. But anyway, it's just something you got to go through. They all say that, right? Just something you got to go through. You got to go through it. All right, so let's all. So some may want to go through the Sankirtan Yajna. In whatever lifestyle of ashram they choose, they may want to have a lifelong commitment to the Sankirtan Yajna. not only distributing Srila Prabhupada's books themselves, but inspiring others to distribute them. This way, that way, we're not hung up on one particular method. Now in New Zealand, we have the great benediction, the unparalleled benediction of right now deposited on this land. It are 50,000 Srimad Bhagavatam first cantos. 50,000. If you go to the Brahmachari Ashram in Auckland, in their little storage area outside the ashram, how many are there? I think they have 10,000 there. Just that enough is impressive. It's 10,000 Bhagavatam first cantos. This is it's because it makes a place a holy tirtha. And there are 50,000. Another 40,000 are stored in Govinda Das's warehouse. There are 50,000 Bhagavatams, first canto, volume ones in New Zealand. Yeah. That is a mighty presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it means we are feeling the weight of these 50,000 books. We like that they're here, but we'll like it even better when they're gone. So we have to bring up our devotional service to another level to cope with this, to cope with the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is yajna. We perform the yajna, and then we satisfy Lord Chaitanya. That is our principle. We do the yajna as prescribed for this age of Kali. Yajnaya sankirtana praya yajantihi samedasaha. Those who are intelligent sufficiently, they'll perform this sankirtan yajna, meaning the congregational glorification of Krishna. Congregational meaning not solitary, but spreading the glories of Krishna far and wide. For some or other, we want to be connected with that, directly or indirectly, somehow. But please remember this, 50,000 Srimad Bhagavatams. Beautiful books. Yes, aren't they beautiful? They shine, don't they? Prabhupada personally designed those covers. There's nothing in the world looking like that book. Definitely when people see that book, they just out of this world. It just looks like it's out of this world. 50,000. So, this is the burden of love that's been put on our shoulders. Yes. Krishna takes care of his devotee. The cat has a rat in its mouth, and the cat also carries a kitten in the mouth. They are feeling completely two different experiences. If you're taking birth simply for Krishna's pleasure, you'll have a different experience. But if you're taking birth because of your own purposes, you had some desires to fulfill in this world, well, that's another thing. Yes? Is that Sam? Oh, okay. Shaden, any questions? We're so happy to have Shaden here. I knew him when he was, when did I first meet him? Maybe 95. How old were you in 1995? 5 years old. So we're so happy to be reunited with him again. You're having a good time here? Everyone's taking care of you nicely? Good prasad? All right. Huh? Oh, you're a prasadam addict? All right, consider this your home. Anytime, you can just jump on the ferry, come across. Chant and dance in ecstasy. Take prasad. You guys are taking good care of him. Also know Kadiravan Mataji, she's also looking after you. So you have so many well-wishers. So that your Krishna conscious future will be so nice. And I think today Steve is arriving from Invercargill. Some of you know Steve. You know him, Krishnaloka? He used to live in, where was it? Rotorua. He used to come to the Auckland Loft. You probably will when you see him. You used to see him in Rotorua, Ramdas? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Your worship.